I'm starting to get the feeling that in life there are two types of people. The first type have too much time on their hands. And the second type have too much talent, too much drive, too much ambition, that it seems as if they're trying to squeeze 28 out of a 24-hour day. And our guest this week on Key Africans Unlocked definitely falls in the latter category, Kofi Ofori-Boateng. And depending on who you speak to, some people will say, oh yeah, we know him, the author. Some people will say, we know him, the actor and the model. Some people will say, we know him, the musician, the rapper. He wears many hats. And so Zubs and I sat down with him to do what we do, unlock his story.
Key Africans Unlocked. Happy Thursday, people. Zubs, how's it going?
Good. Since the last time we spoke.
Yeah. the last time on the chat, though, you know, I make reference to the fact that Zubs is weak.
Why do you always do this at the beginning of every part? It's ridiculous.
I don't have to explain it, but that's ridiculous.
Go ahead.
I always tease him about how his week is dependent on the result of his football team. It's tired. I won't even go there anymore.
Okay. Can I tell you what happened? Yeah. The one time on a podcast, I said to him, I have had a bad week because of Arsenal. Ever since then, all he ever does at the beginning of podcasts is talk about,
with the way the team rolls every week, you know, that greeting can be valid.
So I can
bad week, bad week. I can already
tell that the bulk of my attention is going to be going to you in this conversation.
Let me guess, I'm not the Chelsea fan on the pod.
No, but I don't really follow it, but I know that Wenger just keeps priming his boys for a serious drubbing every single year. It's the same old thing. So I feel for you guys, man. I really do.
Yeah.
You're so, right. You're only going to be talking to him the whole time.
No, man. Okay, so out with the football. Let's give a good intro to Kofi. Kofi is a man who wears many hats. So, he's doing modeling on big budget TV ads. He is also an author. He's written a book. But I was saying I should share the story of how I met Kofi. So 2011, we were prepping my album, and our mutual friend Inyambo, aka Inyams, who I think is the link, you know, in many respects between us. I was in the UK, and there was a verse that was needed for one of the songs. The song was tentatively titled Greener Pastures. Mm-hmm. So I had done the first verse, and we're looking for somebody to do the following verse, you know. So he sent me this thing. So I'm in the kitchen, you know how it is when you're at your in-laws, you know, you're helping out. And then I put the earphones on from this song thing that Nyamza sent. So I listen to the first part, and it's my verse, you know. Then I forward a bit. Then I hear my voice saying words that I've never said. So I'm like, what's going on here? I rewind, you know, because the resonance and stuff in your voice was so similar to my, you know.
Compliment.
So I was like, it freaked me out a bit. So I'm like, what's this guy?
Huge compliment right there.
Right? You know, that is a huge compliment.
And huge then, compliment. No, man. It just, you know. So huge we finished the song. We completed that song. And we also won a song together with Zubs. On that same album, Flowers, Needles, Drum Beats.
Another huge compliment.
Which is something that we have, you know,
in common.
Yeah, so that's the foundation of how I met you, man.
So you thought, you know, there was a competitor out there. You thought there was someone out there better than you at doing you. Is how you met him. Is what you're trying to say. There was a better version of Chilu out there.
Antelope.
That's the problem with this coffee guy. Even the beard, you know, I'm trying to get my gray on. And look at, you know, he like doubles the volume.
The volume just also. It's the conditioner. It's yeah.
And you know, it's a blessing, man, to first of all, you know, be your comrade, your friend, your brother, and also to have you on the pod.
Mentor, don't forget that.
Yeah, welcome.
My mentor, yeah.
Oh, he's your mentor.
Nice.
Yeah. Looks like you're mentoring everybody out here in Johannesburg.
I think people don't know the meaning of the word, you know what I mean? Just kind of bandying about.
No, he just like drops knowledge like, oh, okay, all right.
Quietly.
What are you doing? Nothing. Don't drive.
Yeah, we walk around with our phones on record every time we have meetings with Chilu.
Yeah,
he doesn't know. Now he knows.
Yeah,
but that's kind of how we know.
Hey, man, we're moving the focus.
Yes.
Let's put the spotlight on.
Kofi Ofori-Boateng.
Yes.
Welcome, bro.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
It's good to have you on Key Africans Unlocked.
Yeah, you know? like that right there. Goodness, Key Africans. Goodness. Yo.
I know, right?
Hey.
I know. You know, the thing about it is, let me tell you, we decided when we started doing this podcast that everybody has a story to tell, and everybody's story has gems in it, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter what your vibe is.
Mm.
It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, a Koffi Ofori Boateng, you know, or an Ofi, or you know what I mean, or a Vatis, or a Chilu or Zabs, or whoever. You could be anybody sitting in that chair. Okay. And there will be all kinds of different types of people sitting in that chair.
All right.
Because why? Because everybody has a story to tell. And all in everybody's story, there's gems to be learned.
True.
And that makes you a key African to know and to unlock.
Mm.
Well, know, that's kind of our, that's kind of how we roll around here. That's what we, that's what we see.
For real. I can respect that.
So it's good to have you here. For me personally, I'm very happy that you're sitting in this chair. Because I didn't realize I could ever have beard envy in my life. Now I'm sitting here looking at Chilu and his peppers and you and your peppers. I'm sitting here going, damn. What's at what point in my life?
It's the conditioner. It's all about the conditioner.
And then hair dye, you know, so.
So it's good to have you here, man. And I'm very happy that we do share a song. And now you can share a couple of, a couple of gems from your story, man. Let's start with... who you are. How would you describe who you are? Who's Koffi Ofori Boateng?
Real talk, just an average guy. Like an average everyday Joe who just decided to, you know, get up and either pick up a microphone and spit into it, or pick up a pen and write, or pick up a laptop type. I'm just an ordinary guy who's just basically trying to live his dream. And make some kind of impact on the world that he lives in. That's pretty much it.
And in chasing your dream, is that how you came here?
I guess it's in the process of doing that that I began to, you know, tap into the courage and tap into the strength to explore certain things that I'd really put off for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So when Chilu even talks about how we met, that was a huge dream come true for me because I've been spitting or rhyming since the age of about 12, 13, 14. And I had never really seriously worked on a project that ever got released. So when someone of his caliber calls you up, or Nyams calls you up and tells you, listen, like we're gonna put you on someone like Chilu's project, you're like, okay. And that happened at a point where I was ready to start chasing certain things that I've been running away from, or I had been too afraid to explore prior to that, so yeah. Just a regular guy who through a series of choices to do a little bit more each day has come into contact with some incredible people. And you know, you really are the company that you keep. So yeah.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Frequency. Well, I don't find out, like, to tell us a bit about you before we met you. I mean, like, did you grow up, I know you're based in South Africa now. Where did you grow up? You know, tell us a bit about Koffi before we knew Koffi.
Okay. Koffi, born in Ghana, Cape Coast, to two Ghanaian parents, Patrick Ofori, Dorothy Ofori. Seven kids. I'm the middle kid. In a very interesting position, actually, because the first kid from my mom, because my dad was a widower, so the first kid from my mom, but the middle kid in the whole set up, and that's a really weird place to be in, because you got the first kid expectations from your mom, and then you expected to shut up and just fall in line
with
your dad. So
yeah.
It was a really weird setup, but it was a great one because it taught me some very, I think, valuable lessons, life lessons that I've carried throughout my life. We lived in Ghana for about, I think, 3 years before we moved to Nigeria. My dad took a position in Nigeria, in the Ahmadu Bello University Library. He was a librarian by trade. And then my mom was a school teacher. She owned her own school initially. When we left Nigeria, we went back to Ghana for about a year. Then moved again to Lesotho with my dad. He got a job at the National University of Lesotho. We were there for a few years. Left Lesotho, moved to the Transkei. And, you know, that's where we've been, well, SA's been home for pretty much the last, I think, 30 years.
Mm.
Yeah. So the bulk of my life has been spent in South Africa, but I have had the benefit of experiencing life in different continents. Oh, sorry, like different countries on the continent.
So, yeah. I've been to Cape Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like three hours from Accra.
Yeah.
Three, yeah.
Approximately.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've never been. Never been to Ghana.
Man, Ghana is something else. I don't know if you go back regularly, but
not regularly.
But the vibe of that whole country, it's man. Dope.
I have a friend of mine. His name is Dino. He loves Ghana. He grew up in Harare in the 80s and 90s when Harare was just.
We're very similar people, I've noticed.
This is what he says. Yeah. He says that walking around in Ghana, in Accra, everywhere, he feels like he's back in Harare in the 80s. Yeah. Just the energy of the space and the way the people interact, you know. What has been the most striking thing about your travels? What have you picked up that sticks out the most? Specifically with the countries on the continent that you've traveled in.
For me, I would say we don't give ourselves enough credit as Africans. And we tend to focus on the negativity of this continent rather than on what we could learn from each other and what we could contribute to each other. I think that's the biggest thing that I've picked up, because no matter where I go, you know, we tend to shun our identity in favor of what the colonial, masters pretty much, you know, thrust upon us. And it's you know, from a cultural perspective, it's great in the sense that we had that exchange, and you know, it's always good to take some good from the others. But one of the most destructive things that we picked up is self-hate. And when you've traveled around and been exposed to the different ways of life, different traditions, different ways of thinking in these different countries, you realize that there's so much that ties us together, that binds us together, but at the same time, our differences, you know, should actually be empowering the daylights out of us as a people. But you know, you tend to pick up on the differences and almost like the wariness, and that bugs me, because I think we should be way past that at this point, and we should be working harder at cohering as a people.
So you feel like our differences are what cause us to see each other as less, or to see ourselves as less? When you say self-hate, what do you mean? You mean like we personally feel like because we are who we are, we're less?
Well, you know, I think, and it depends on where in the continent you are, that you'll see a specific facet of that.
Okay.
Where because of, like, let's look at the education system, for example. You know, someone who has gone to what would be considered a more African, been through what's considered a more African educational system, tends to have a bit more pride in who he or she is, than someone who's been through maybe like the missionary system, the religious system, or the Western system, Cambridge, whatever you want to call it, Oxford.
That's interesting.
You know, like, tends to have, you know, more of a critical eye when they look at our people, because like they'll always measure our people against a Western standard, using a Western lens, if you will.
That's interesting. Let me think. I'm trying to think if I agree with that, you know, because I went to a school called Prince Edward. There's nothing. Prince Edward is colonial. We did Cambridge O levels, we did Cambridge A levels, we used to wear blazers, and I loved that school. It's a beautiful school, great school spirit, all boys. We have a wonderful, rich culture, rich tradition. So I'm trying to think about what you said now in the sense of just a different outlook of how we see ourselves based on that. And I don't know if I agree,
Well, I mean, like, it's a fair point to make, but my thing is, once again, you are an MC, firstly. You're well-traveled, secondly. You've been exposed to different to things that most people haven't been exposed to. So you know, the relationship you're going to have with others, part of it comes from the fact that people resonated with your identified with your music, identified with what you were talking about, and that brought you together. That's the first thing. Then the second thing is, as you traveled and you were exposed to other people's cultures, other African cultures, you found some way to fit within those cultures. If not, so that gives you more open-mindedness. But your typical person who has been indoctrinated with that within that system, for example, who believes that, like, the blazer is the only way to dress, the tie is the only way to dress, and starts to identify that as being a superior kind of African, for example. That's the kind of individual that I'm talking about.
Got you.
And Yeah.
Okay. It's fascinating you say that, and this might kind of maybe be off center.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was when I started out working in radio. So my radio name was at the time Sharpshooter.
Sorry,
I actually don't at the time.
Can I tell you something? Unintended.
I don't know why he's laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing. Because I'm from that era, bro. Yeah.
It was Sharpshooter.
DJ Sharpshooter.
No, it actually had a bongo, so it had a third of Africanness in it. It was Sharpshooter Bongo, or Bongo the Sharpshooter.
All right.
So, but...
Sorry, man. Yeah, man. That's hilarious to me.
But the thing is, there were a lot of people from that era who, when I started just going by Chilulemba on radio, had not really an issue with it, but it wasn't the cool thing to be, you know, to use your African first last name on radio, because... Mm. Somebody wanted to be, you know, I'm just picking a name out of the hat, Jerome Sanchez, or you know what I mean? Like a name that kind of makes you sound like you're above.
I hear you. Know? You. Yeah.
So
right.
there's that attitude, and it comes from somewhere. You know?
It does.
Yeah.
Look, you said your parents are Dorothy and
Patrick.
Patrick. Mm, exactly. My parents were Catherine and George.
Mm. Mm.
Your parents were who?
Winter and Irene.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you have an English name?
Okay. So here's the interesting thing. I was the only kid in the family who was born without an English name.
Okay.
I was Kofi Boateng Ofori.
Mm-hmm.
Boateng is actually my second name, but due to an admin error at the Ghanaian embassy, they switched the names around and made it Kofi Ofori Boateng. So I'm actually Ofori, but I'm the only Ofori Boateng in the family because of that error.
I was going to ask you, because your brother Greg.
Greg is Ofori.
Greg Ofori, yeah.
And you have an English name. You got yours is
Chilu Michael, but I gave myself Michael. Yeah.
What do you mean you gave yourself Michael?
Yeah, it's just in my book.
Yeah. Because
Listen.
Yeah.
I go into Chilu's personal things. Yeah. I'm like, yo, so Chilu, somewhere. He's like, you read in my book. It's in my book. You read about it in the book. I'm like, what's this guy?
The standard answer.
Anyway, the point I was trying to say with the English names.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Finish your point, because I can see you're itching to finish your point. Finish your point.
No. When I was like 11 or whatever it was, I had the opportunity to be baptized into the Catholic Church. So they said, what name have you chosen to be your Christian name?
Mm.
And MJ was popping, so I said, Michael.
Really?
And the priest said, that's a very good name, Chilu. He didn't know. I was like,
is that a real thing?
Shimon. It's a real thing, man. Like,
so when you get baptized, is that like a Catholic thing?
Yeah, I mean, when you're baptized, you have to have like a Christian name that Francis. Yeah.
Oh, so you give yourself that. It's not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, you can maybe, I don't know, decide in the family, but I was one-on-one with the priest, and I'd already figured that there's the loophole to get
to get my name
onto my documents.
Shimon, man.
To become official.
Anyway, I have no English name, but the point I was trying to raise is that they at a certain point in the generations, it seems, people have decided to make a conscious effort, a concerted effort to not have English names.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I know my brother, I don't have children yet, you know, but my brother and sisters, they also kind of do the debating thing. Do I give them an English name? Do I give them a... And the one niece I have who has an English name is because of the dad trying to honor one of his... elders,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
But otherwise they would have not opted for an English name, which I find a fascinating thing in terms of being able to see who's better than who, what is seen as more acceptable on a general level, what downplays our Africanness, what plays up our Africanness, you know what I mean?
So in my case, we just got into Lesotho and all the kids were, you know how kids are. So go, feed, all that nonsense. So I used to get it every single day. And by the time we moved to the trans guy, I told my parents, look, from now on, you guys call me Benjamin, okay?
Benjamin.
Yeah. Of all the flipping names, bruh, of all the names. So I'm like, no, you guys call me Benjamin. Quit with this Kofi nonsense because I'm sick and tired of getting teased. Do I look like a damn beverage to y'all? So.
Well, I mean,
nowadays.
I
appreciate that. Like,
you know. Chocolate.
Oh, Lord. Man.
I don't know about the who part, but okay.
I'm even teasing the people. Like, you know,
yeah, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that.
No, we're not, actually.
No, we have to. Because
that's in the book. That's in the book. So I basically you know, adopted the name Benjamin just to protect myself as a kid. And by the time I got to college, I realized, you know, wait, first of all, it's a goofy name, you know, for me. The last thing any person is probably thinking when they meet me is, oh, Ben, who Ben?
Nah, who Benjamin?
Nah, who Benjamin? And exactly, it was exactly that, especially in the Eastern Cape. Who Benjamin? So it was rough, man. So I was like, you know what, like, let me just go back to, you know, my name, Kofi. That's who I am. And like, names are very powerful. And I figured that, look, my parents did not give me a Western name for a reason. So I needed to honor that and just go back to Kofi and, you know, use that. Never since I've been Kofi. But people who know me from college still call me, college and high school, still call me Benjamin. Mm. And yeah, I'm still trying to get them out of that. Mm.
It's interesting. Benjamin, yeah. Of all the names.
I know, right?
It's so random, man.
Son of the right hand.
Oh, yeah. You took it there. Yeah. That's the other thing. Do you want to jump in or should I?
No, go ahead.
Because I wanted to find out from you. You appear to me as a person who kind of knows himself. In order to write a book about your various thoughts and opinions on things, you have to have a sense of, I know who I be.
Yeah.
Your kind of situation. So what are the things that kind of shaped who you became? You know, because with your music, for example,
yeah.
You were doing hip hop from the time you were 12. You were rapping, you know, from that age. Mm. But at some point, you decided, I'm going to be rapping about these topics, and some are off the table. Yeah. From what I understand.
Yeah.
So, what are the things that shaped you to become who you are?
Well, for the most part, it was I guess the books that I read. You know, being the son of a librarian, you get exposed to a whole lot of literature. So there was even a time in our lives where we didn't even own a TV. He deliberately refused to buy a TV because all he did was his publisher friends would drop books off sometimes and, you know, boxes of books, and that would be your entertainment. So
he being your dad.
My dad, yeah. So a lot of it came from there. If I wrote, I wanted it to be something impactful. I wanted it to be something meaningful, and I wanted it to be said in a way that actually made people want to listen to it. Then the other contributing factor would be religion. So I grew up in a Christian home, and I'd always been told that you're going to end up in ministry, as they call it nowadays, serving God and serving God's people and all that. So that also played a huge role. Then the older I got and the more I began to do the history of us as a people in different parts of the continent, that also began to play a role as well, because I realized that, look, one of the biggest tools of destruction that has been used against our people has been our people. So we come up with the most creative ways of expressing ourselves, and then someone co-opts that or takes that over and then uses that against us. So I was like, look, I'm not gonna be one of those people. I would rather use what I've been given to help, you know, our people. And yes, initially I did go through my phase where, you know, I was on the, you know, wannabe thug, you know, bling rap nonsense. But once I got through that, I wanted to make meaningful music, and that also helped.
Wow.
Yeah. In your words, tell us a bit about what your book is about.
The book is basically, you know,
It's your first book, huh?
It's my first published book.
Okay.
I have a bunch of them just sitting at home that I really don't know what to do with, and I'm not really comfortable releasing.
Mm-hmm.
But in essence, it's about how men can serve women and how women need to allow men to serve them.
Mm-hmm.
So people keep talking about, the media especially keeps putting it out there that, you know, women's liberation, the emancipation of women, women are taking over, women are doing it for themselves, women are, what's the term? There's a specific term I'm looking for. But when you look at it from an African context, for example, this is nothing new to the African woman, you know? It may have been interrupted, but they're basically returning to their place of power.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nothing new for the African woman. So my whole premise was, while you're busy making it in your career, while you're busy making it in business, while you're, you know, rediscovering your strength, your power, and all of that, don't forget that you also hold a power over how a man is supposed to treat you. So instead of complaining about not being treated right by your man, also look at what you might be doing that hamstrings him or prevents him from being able to do the things that he would like to do for you. Because there are lots of good guys who have been in situations where they meet a woman, they want to treat her right, but then she sees his treating her right as weakness. She sees it as unmanliness. She sees it as him allowing her to run roughshod over her. And she may treat him with respect as a result of that. So the whole book is basically saying, look, recognize the power that you have to create the quality relationship that you want, or to destroy the opportunity to have a quality relationship that you have.
It's very brave of you, though.
Yeah, I know.
Because when you go into that arena, you will either have people who will be yes and amen to the points in the book, and you'll be, so you know, you'll have some people who will pick three fingers in the air.
Yes.
And no, you did not say.
Yeah.
So how are you? You know, is it a brave move? Have you had like backlash?
You must have had.
Points?
Everybody has backlash.
Everybody.
Listen, we're in the era of backlash across the board.
Yeah. You know,
2017.
As long as Black Twitter doesn't
had like hashtag move. Yeah. Black Twitter, etc.
Hey, you know,
you have. Heath, right. Do you have a? Have you felt like you've had a target on your back?
Not really. Look, that I really didn't write this with the intention of defending myself from anyone or defending my opinion from anyone. It was basically, my whole thinking was, the people who need to read this will read this.
Mm-hmm.
The people who need to hear this will hear this. And the ones who don't want to hear it can pass it, you know, like ignore it, and let's just, you know, do our separate things. Yes, there has been some backlash. And interestingly enough, like you said, the three clicks, you know, because you have some women out there talking about, yeah, you're a man. We don't want to hear what a man has to say about how a woman should conduct herself in a relationship. Now I'm like, okay, fine, cool. So let me understand this. You have an issue when a guy oppresses you. Then you have an issue when a man remains silent about your oppression. Then you have an issue about a man talking about what you can do to help end the oppression, or how a man can help you end the oppression. All right, which one of these are we going with? Because I'm a guy, I can only move in one direction.
Mm.
Point me in the right direction, I'll go in that direction.
Mm.
You know, so like, as much as I don't expect every single person to agree with what I'm saying, let's at least have the conversation from a place of maturity. Let's at least hear, you know, why you feel that way about men. Let's hear why you feel that way about relationship. Why do you feel this way about a man's role in your life? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, and let's talk about what informed that. And then we can talk about how we can move past it and bring you into a place where you can actually serve each other in a relationship.
Interesting. Okay, so, and I think this will probably be the last thing we'll talk about with regards to the book.
Okay.
What are you hoping to do with this book? So, you know, when you're engaging these kind of conversations with both men and women, what is your hope at the end of the day? What is the aim of that?
That's a very good question. I was recently at a talk this past weekend, and someone asked me if I thought marriage was still relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer was, well, yeah, relevant to Black men. And my answer was yes. My reason for that was the Black family now more than ever, the Black man now more than ever needs to be either in a committed relationship with his woman, or in a marriage with his woman. If you're in marriage, understand the impact of what you're doing. Marriage is all about wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that, at least it should be all about wealth.
Mm-hmm.
People married to bring wealth into the family. You would go into a woman's home where she was helping to create wealth for her father, for her mother, for her brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would pay a bride price as sort of like, please forgive me for taking wealth out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
You bring that wealth into your home, and your family would benefit from that. Now, we look at modern society where black men don't want to commit or black men don't want to get married. And you take it a step further, you have the state intervening in their marital affairs. Mm-hmm. So now the state gets to determine whether you're fit to be a parent, you're fit to be a spouse, you're fit to be a guardian, as opposed to you putting yourself in a situation where you determine these things and you prove your worth to the people who will actually benefit from your presence in their lives, if I'm making sense. So my focus is, when I first wrote the book, it was all about someone needs to hear this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write it. I'm going to put it out there. But now the focus is moving more towards African relationships, black relationships. Mm-hmm. We need to fix each other. Because right now, the rhetoric around black men is they're useless, they're players, they're jobless. All they do is sleep around. They're deadbeat dads. That's the narrative. The research doesn't really support that. But mm-hmm. but that's the narrative. Then for a lot of black guys who don't want to get married, the narrative is our women are problematic. They don't want to submit. They're superficial. They're only interested in money. That's the narrative. Mm-hmm. There isn't, once again, a lot of evidence to support that, mm-hmm. but that's the perception. So now, how do we fix this? How do we move forward as the black couple? Because black love is a beautiful thing. Initially, I was on some universal, let's all hold hands and let's all get along. Mm-hmm. But now I'm starting to target it at my people, because when we're together, it's a beautiful thing. Our children are beautiful. Mm-hmm. Our families are beautiful. Our marriages should be beautiful. Our relationships should be beautiful. Mm-hmm. If I go into a black woman's life, I need to contribute meaningfully into her life. I can't just be going there to smash every single one I come across. Mm-hmm. How much destruction am I leaving in my wake? Mm-hmm. You know, and then we want to turn around and blame other people. So my aim now is, how do we start, you know, using our marriages to create and to keep wealth? Mm-hmm. How, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty okay. much. The views expressed by Kofi Ofori-Bote.
His alone.
Do not represent key Africans.
No, it's all good.
I have to say, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I disagree with a lot of what you're saying as well.
True. Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know how, you know, robust of an engagement we can have on things that you hold ideologically true in that mm-hmm. sense. But I have found, for example, that there are generalities that can be made. And of mm-hmm. course, it's, you know, it's the only way to have a real meaningful conversation is to deal yes. with the bulk and the majority. You
yes.
know?
Yeah.
But from a personal perspective, yeah. I find that, you know, a lot of the narratives that are out about black men, mm. especially, I'm not sure about women, but black men, in my world,
yeah.
they're not true. They're false. The people that I have around me, the yeah. majority of them,
yeah.
pretty much fly in the face of those stereotypes.
Yes.
And I find that it's very difficult to be able to draw those kind of generalities and vouch for them, you know, mm-hmm. which is why, for me, the approach that you take is a little bit, I'm prickly with it. It's okay. a prickly approach.
All right.
But what I love about it is that you have the courage of your convictions to yeah. be able to engage the conversation.
Yes.
You're willing to say, listen, let's have the conversation. Mm-hmm. Here's my point of view,
yeah.
and it's out there.
Yeah.
Let's debate it. Let's interrogate it,
yeah.
and let's see what's up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because I really don't think those conversations are happening nearly enough.
No.
You know, there's yeah. and there's evidence of that everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so at least the conversation needs to happen, especially mm-hmm. among men.
Yes,
you know, especially among men.
Yeah,
you know,
you're taking the conversation a lot as well. To because I see every other day, I'm seeing like social media, you having these chats on Facebook Live, etc. So that's
yeah.
the another frontier where you're having
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes I spend hours on your Instagram, bro.
Really? Just,
yeah, listening to the video and going, I never thought of that. That's interesting. And then I wish Instagram could do longer posts. Now that I know you got a Facebook situation yeah. going, I'm actually yeah. going to jump on that because I don't yeah. think I've been to your Facebook
okay.
on that tip.
Okay.
I want to get back to personal things. Let's start with yeah. something very simple. What's your regimen like? What's your daily regimen like? Get day in the life of Kofi Ofori, from waking up to calling it a day.
My weekdays are pretty straightforward. I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I do a little bit of
reading.
Yeah. It's real, man.
What, it's, sure. It's 4 too early for you.
Hey, dude, I'm 6 o'clock, but 4.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. I have to. 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm up. You know, do a little bit of reading, do a little bit of meditation. Shoot out of the house, run about 4:45, fetch my gym partner. We head to the gym, put in about an hour's worth of work. Head back to the house. We'll drop him off, head back to the house. Do the morning videos. After the morning videos, say goodbye to the kids. Either drop them off at school, or my partner does that. And yeah, like the day starts. Head off to my 9 to 5. 8 to 5, rather.
No, we all call them 9 to 5s.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the generic term for us. It's a 9 to 5.
Like, no, he puts in an hour extra.
Nice little hour. Keeping it all the way real.
Yeah. I mean, look, if we were to keep it real, it could be an 8 to 8. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could go there.
Yeah.
You know,
so, yeah.
But go ahead. Yep. 9 to 5. And then after that?
After that, I have different interests. I'm a Bitcoin miner and investor. So,
really?
Yeah.
I have no idea about this Bitcoin thing, eh?
Oh, yeah, for real?
It just boggles my mind.
We need to have a conversation.
Because I'm hearing Africa needs Bitcoin.
Listen.
This is what I'm hearing.
Listen.
Yeah?
Opportunities.
You need to school me, bro.
This is the time.
Seriously, you need to school me.
So, I'm doing that. And I basically, you know, do education on that, a little bit of education on that.
Mm-hmm.
Even got my kids involved in it, so yeah.
Nice.
Do a little bit of reading if I have the time. Spend time with the family. Coaching, I tend to leave for the weekends. I see a few clients weekends. And any other engagements that I may have, I pretty much work Sunday to Sunday. There are no real days off, but that's my life in a nutshell.
Yeah. Nice. And how much of that is immersed in music?
Lately, not a lot. I haven't written in almost 2 years. No, a year and a half.
Mm. How about listening to it?
Listening every single day.
Yeah?
Every single morning.
What are you listening to right now?
I'm getting my ratchet on, man. Like, I am seriously getting
What's your definition of... Because like, for me, my dollar sign is not ratchet. You
dude,
know what I mean?
But I am combing it up. Like,
yo, Gom is a problem, man.
It's a problem.
Gom, you know, I looked at Gom from a distance. I was like, nah. And then it was like this little poke on
your
neck.
You know.
And it just, you found your neck doing this.
You feel like a sellout.
Next thing, your leg is doing a little bit of a, you know, and then you feel like a sellout. Like,
you feel like a sellout. Like,
how's this music
goodness.
Getting into me like this?
You know, the spirits of Biggie and Pac should never see me doing this.
Pac would be so disappointed. He's turning right
like,
now.
Dude.
In an empty grave because Pac is still alive somewhere.
Man. You know, and then my kids.
Okay, so Gorm is, you're in there.
My kids have me listening to like Ayo and Teo. I am so ashamed of myself.
Okay, I don't know what Ayo and Teo is.
That Rolly song, all I ever wanted was a Rolly.
Yes, oh my gosh,
yeah,
I got you, got you, got you.
My kids, same WhatsApp group.
But it's stuck in my head. Lil Uzi Vert, they got me listening to Lil Uzi Vert.
Yeah, I listened to some Lil Uzi Vert myself.
Oh man. And then, apart from that, I love what's happening on the local hip hop scene, rap scene rather, let me say.
Mm-hmm.
I love the guys who are taking risks. Guys like Questa, guys like, look, Casper, I respect his hustle. AKA, I respect his hustle as well. Stogie is back holding it down for heads, but just a reinvigorated, reinterpreted kind of situation. So I love what's happening on the local scene. I love the fact that SA is getting recognition on its own steam. I wish more guys would take those kinds of, you know, risks, but you know, it is what it is. The business is what it is. As long as it's local, usually that's what I want to listen to. I'm not really trying to mess with a lot of stuff from overseas right now.
Mm.
Now your profile, let's say past three years or so, it's just like, so we see a lot. I mean, you're on talk shows on national TV, sharing your thoughts on stuff. You're on, as I said earlier on, a lot of commercials. Your exposure is out there, and you're also kind of like a private guy.
Yeah.
You know. So how are you managing that conflict in a sense? Because you know there's a lot of attention on you right now, and you you know, addressing it and getting engaged in it, but at the same time trying to shy away from it. how you doing that balancing act? How's that going?
Like, to be very honest with you, I actually don't feel it. No, seriously, because, you know, for starters, I don't really watch TV. So I don't really see myself. I saw myself for the first time on TV at a friend's place. There was a soccer match playing, and then I saw the beer ad.
It's fine. As long as they don't have competitors giving us money.
Okay, all right.
Then you can say their name.
It's Black Label. Carlin Black Label. So, like, that was the first time I actually saw myself on TV.
That was a dope ad, though.
Brilliant ad.
Yeah.
Jono. Flip. Phenomenal team. So I don't really see myself like that, firstly. And then secondly, with the book, with Real Talk, most of the only time I really realize that something's going on is usually after a show when maybe I get more followers and more comments. And then, I respond. Facebook Live, when I do my thing, it's like I'm speaking to family. My whole thing is notes to my brother, notes to my sister, note to self. So it feels like I'm talking to family. And once I'm done with that, I can sort of, like, you know, move on with the rest of my day, because I have an 8-to-5 that keeps me busy, keeps me focused on other things. So I never really, apart from the few people who may stop me in the corridors of work on some, like, oh, we saw that. Like, I don't really feel it. My kids, the same. Like, they don't really see it on TV, and when they do, it's like, oh, okay, well, you got another one? Okay, nice.
just play that roly-roly song and we're good.
You know what I'm saying? So
just another day in the life of dad.
Yeah.
That's actually when I asked Chulu about that, about his voiceover stuff. I was like, how do you feel sometimes when you're watching TV and then you see your ads back to back?
Chulu.
Like three, one at a time, back to back. Like
on the radio.
There's dad's voice again. Oh, there's dad's voice, and that's dad's voice again. You know? And he's like,
Not watching a lot of Netflix, so there's no hope for seeing, hearing my voice.
Hey, listen, I have big plans for Key Africans. Keep your Netflix subscription on. Go ahead.
This crossed my mind early on. Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, yes. That dude, the maester dude, the guy who's always in the library with the books.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you said that, you know, your dad, you know, switched off the TV subscription or whatever, and was just books in the house.
Yeah.
That's what I was picturing.
Dude, like,
you saw the maester.
You weren't far off, man. You weren't far off.
Your mind is a problem, bro.
You were not far off, man.
I'll never see that dude the same again.
Dude. Just like give him some melanin and cut the hair.
Yeah, there we go.
You're good to go.
Have you done movies? You haven't done movies,
right? I've done one so far.
What movie
is it out?
No, it's not out yet. I believe they're currently working on some stuff in LA. I'm not sure if it's distribution or marketing, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's coming out.
Kenny, who's our mutual friend as well, he directed one of our videos. And he recently directed an ad that you were in.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, off the record, he was just saying, this guy should get into movies because he's got the look that people, like, directors are looking for. So
oh, thank you.
Well, listen, Black Panther's doing its thing. John Kanye and them have done their thing.
Ooh, yeah.
So I think, you know what? I think Africans who are on screen are about to see a new dawn, man.
Yeah.
An even better one, I think.
It's time.
Who motivates the motivator? When you're feeling down and you're low and you're trying to hear something that'll perk you up, make you feel good, who do you listen to?
Well, firstly,
watch.
I don't really see myself as a motivator. So, And as far as motivating me, my kids, cause flip, they keep me on point. And when I'm not, they let me know. So, that's the most honest feedback you'll ever get. And by the same token, the pressure of having to model sort of like the right things for them and to them kind of keeps me going as well.
Nice.
Yeah. When I need to be refreshed, when I need to be replenished, just anyone really can film me. Like Chiluma might send me a text and, you know, say something random that he doesn't even realize, you know, the significance of, and that'll do something for me. Maybe watching TV, listening to a song, I'll hear something that'll get me going. So it's different sources. The people who engage on my posts, for example, I even posted the other day that, you know, people think it's a one-way flow of information. Mm-hmm. It's actually two-way because I learned from them as well.
Okay.
A lot of their experiences, a lot of their testimonies, a lot of their stories actually give me greater insight, greater perspective, and sometimes like just make me feel grateful for the space that I'm in right now, because it's rough out there. People are going through a lot out there, and mm-hmm. when you realize that some people are carrying bigger crosses than you, trust me, you stop moping around really quickly.
Great point.
Before we, I know we're about to go to rapid fire. This just crossed my mind. Do you get to a situation where some of the things that you've committed to your book, for example, they're out there, that's what your beliefs and your thoughts are. Then you have somebody who challenges you in a debate, in a conversation that makes you relook what you committed to the book. You know, what happens then? Do you know it's on paper, it's published, I need to stick to this way of thinking, or you know, are you flexible to?
Well, the way I wrote the book, I hope that I was able to put across a clear distinction between principles, universal principles, and my opinion. So opinions are dynamic things. I'm human, I'm allowed to change my mind. But principles, I mean, like, for example, like the law of gravity, that's not going to change anytime soon. You can work around it, but it still exists. So I try to focus more on principle than my actual opinion. Yesterday, I went off on a little tirade even, and I ended up apologizing this morning because I was just like, look, you know. Like,
my bad.
That's just how I felt.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. But I need to be living according to principle and not my emotions.
Yeah.
So, it was yet another. Sorry.
I'm with you. Yeah. While you're doing this, like me with Black Panther, I went on the rant, Black Panther, A, B, C, D. Mm. And, you know, 2 days have passed. I'm like, wait a minute. you know, should I go back and say, okay, people, you know, I'm scrolling steadily into Black Panther world and, you know. I'm appreciating this for what it is.
Social media does that, right? It gives you the impression that you can't change your mind.
It gives you the
impression that when someone says something today, that's everything this person is.
Yeah.
This person is all those things that were in one tweet.
Yeah.
That's what represents the entire existence of this human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only to find that, wait, there's more. And it might be multi-layered. And maybe there's
last one on that, Obama. I watched this dude before he said he was going to stand for president when he was senator and stuff. I was randomly flicking channels. I see him on, I think he was on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, you know, how, you know, he's grateful. They asked him, are you going to be, stand for presidency? No, blah, 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 blah. Then months later, then they interview him and they said, this is what you said when you were on the show. And then they play the clip.
Yeah.
And then he says, no, I've changed my mind.
It's really that simple.
It's that simple. Yeah.
I also feel like you can't. You can't put out any creative work in the public domain for interrogation and not be malleable, you know, especially if you're a creative. And us MCs, rappers, we are the most sensitive. I mean, next to comedians, I guess. Mm. We have got the cushiest place in our ego and in our sense of, like, when it's out there and it's getting critiqued, hey, man, you got to let it live its own life.
Yeah,
people have to interrogate it. They have to throw it against the wall, rip it up to shreds.
Yeah, yeah.
And when it comes back to you, then you get to decide what happens from there. That's on you, you know? Yeah. But when it's out there and it's on them, hey, man, that's on them.
Exactly.
You know? And you can only be true to yourself at any given moment as best as you can in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, anything else further than that, hey, man. You can't, you know, there's nothing you can do about that.
Well said,
And something that I really live by is the perspective of how you take it has got nothing to do with what I intended when I sent it out there. So a lot of the time people will induce meaning into it that I never even meant to convey. So I also bear that in mind. And also, like, as much as possible, I just try to live by the ethos of really think what you're saying through before you say anything. You know, measure your words, count your words carefully before you say them, because, like, they have power. So, yeah, like, that's where, like, being malleable comes in, because sometimes you'll say things in the heat of the moment that you really mean. You really mean, but because you didn't measure your words, you now have to go back and, you know, reclaim them.
Like, yeah.
That was my house.
I'll take that off and edit this. Okay, cool. I think we should go into the rapid fire. Actually, no, let me ask you one more question before we get into it. Rapid fire, I'll explain that. Yeah, when you hear anything to do with rapid and speed, you get worried. And anything to do with fire and anything that is fire. Sweet. Now you combine the two, it's a problem.
Yeah.
But what I want to ask you is about, just real quick, in terms of home, as somebody who's traveled around a lot and as someone who's, who views the continent the way you view it, where do you view as home? And is that even a real thing for you, where it's a geographic thing?
No. Look, I was always a bookworm growing up. I've always lived in my head. I've lived in my writing. So there is that. And then secondly, wherever my kids, wherever my family is, I'm good. As it is, my parents are based in the UK, sometimes in Ghana. My older sister is based in the States. Younger sister is based in the UK. Three of my brothers are based here in SA. One is based in Ghana. So there is no geographic limitation for me. But as far as where my heart's at, it would have to be SA, because SA has given the most to me in terms of experiences. And my career was born here. My I became a man here. So SA has my love, has my loyalty. Ghana, definitely, I'm a patriot, but SA has given me the most.
I can totally relate. Thanks,
So Black Star, well, Black Stars versus Bafana in a game, who are you rooting for?
I'm Black Star now. Actually, neither, man. Neither.
Not right now.
No, right, Nigeria. I'd rather go with Nigeria. Real talk.
Yeah, Ghana, Bafana, I'm going for Nigeria.
Nigeria.
All right, let's get into the rapid fire. Okay, so I'm going to ask you, well, Chilu, because I always ask, and now it's Chilu's turn.
Okay, fine.
We'll split them as you.
All right, cool.
We'll ask you a question, a very simple question. It'll have an option, either A or B.
Okay.
You get to choose which one, A or B, or neither, whatever comes to your mind. You just go with what you feel. If you feel nothing, then feel nothing.
Okay.
There's no right wrong here.
No right.
If what pops in your mind is a curse word or a swear word, then that's fine too.
It is what it is.
We don't discriminate out here.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why it's rapid. And good luck, bro.
Fire.
Thank you.
Intelligence or empathy?
Empathy.
Hmm. Do you want to know why, or do
you? No, I'm good. Right, unless you want to explain.
No, not really.
Number two. Yeah. Arsenal.
We've already spoken about this one, huh?
Oh, yeah, because he told us.
Yeah,
okay, so we crossed the numbers. Maybe Arsenal or Chelsea. Oh, and okay. We know where you are. Yeah.
Neither.
Yeah.
Okay, you go for the third one.
Jay-Z or Diddy?
Jay.
Really?
All day.
And why?
Jay.
Okay.
You
know, someone said to me, why do you consider Jay-Z the greatest rapper of all time? Because at the time, that's what I said. And I was like, how can you not consider Jay-Z the greatest rapper of all time?
The
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those where I wouldn't answer the question with a counter question. But with that one, it makes perfect sense. Like, why would you ever take that position away from Jay?
It's so weird that when you said Jay-Z or Diddy, you were thinking from a rap perspective. I was thinking from an entrepreneurial perspective, because sometimes you forget that, you know, at the core of them, they're artists.
But that's why I respect Jay even more.
Yeah.
Because Diddy from the start came out as an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
you know, people forget that. I mean, like, yes, he was
a
dancer.
That's a good
point. Yeah,
he was a dancer and all that stuff. But when he, like,
Jay came,
what he really got famous for was Biggie. You know, he brought Biggie out. He brought Craig out. So Jay came in as an MC first, and you know, he talks about the street side and all that. But the way he caught up, and in many cases even kept eclipsing Diddy from time to time. Speaks a lot about the man's you know, strength, his willpower, his vision, his thought process, his penchant for strategy. Like, Jay is a strategist of note, taking nothing away from Diddy, but to get where you've gotten as quickly as you have, and to make the kind of connections you've made, you know, and silently too, without even boasting about it, just silently.
Well, he boasts.
Well, every now and then, every now and then. Obama on the text.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even Barack had to drop a mic. He was, you know.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know.
All right, this is now turning into like crawl fire. So let's move on. But yeah, great points, by the way.
Yeah.
You want to move on? Next one, or must I get it?
No, you take it.
Sexiness or beauty?
Sexiness.
Really?
Mm. Beauty fades, man.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Beauty fades. And beauty's like, man, it's like, beauty's so subjective in terms of, yeah, I mean, it's not the beholder, but sexiness, you influence people. You influence people. You can walk into a room and no one has even seen you and just speak and, whoa, okay.
You go, so Chilu, you know, you're sexy.
Well,
apparently.
You know, I have my moments.
I'll take the last one.
Mm. Oh, sorry. Let me add a little bit of to the rapid fire. Beauty seems to be quite standardized these days, whereas sexy comes across as an extremely, subjective thing.
Mm.
It's very individual based.
Mm.
I find something very specific sexy. And I think everyone will agree on what's beautiful, right?
Mm.
So it's, okay, next one.
Mm. Yeah. All right, so love or power?
Same thing.
Mm.
Same thing. Love is power.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll take both.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right.
Okay.
We're done here. We're dropping the mic.
Yeah, no, that's it. Coffee for Boateng, bro. Thank you so much for coming to Key Africans Unlocked.
Thanks for having
me. I'm really happy that we have a song together.
Yeah, man.
And it happened before you became Coffee for Boateng.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
And now I'm even doubly happy that we have a podcast together after you became Coffee for Boateng.
Meister.
God bless you, my brother, and your family.
Thank you, sir.
All of them across the globe. Enjoy your next family get together on Skype. May you guys, you know, continue to grow, multiply, and be successful. And bless, man. I look forward to our next creative collaboration, man.
I look forward to it too, sir. May we all be blessed.
Thank you.
Yeah.